It is time now for History Matters. Taking a look back at this week in history with the one and only Scott Washington, a great historian who joins us here in the studio right now. How are you?
I am doing great, Aaron, and it feels finally like February. Well, no, it's spring, but that's how it was in February, as I recall. At least one part.
We didn't have that random warm-up, though, yes, didn't we, in February? And then March was the trouble month when we got the snow again.
That's right.
Up until March, we were doing fine. We got one 12-inch dump in the middle of January. And that was it.
Well, I was going through some old records and found record for the weather in Hillsboro in the summer of 1781, I believe, which was kind of remarkable to say. Were people measuring that? But apparently they were. And it was about the mid-80s. Felt very comfortable.
Okay.
But it'd be a little warm. But, you know, back then it was like, oh, this is good.
Yeah, right.
So.
Didn't have air conditioning that you could turn on at that point either.
You had
to go outside and
ride a horse.
Yeah, it would do what you do in Hillsboro in 1781. Like, you couldn't just hop down to the wooden nickel and get a cold pint.
That's right.
Yeah.
But this has been a good week in history. I think we should at least note that this was towards the beginning of the week. Linda Brown, the third grader, whose father, Oliver Brown, became a lead plaintiff in the of course, very groundbreaking Brown versus Board of Education after he tried to enroll her in 1951 in the all-white summer elementary school near the family's home in Topeka. And then he took them to suit when they did not approve. And eventually, of course, 1954 is when that decision was made. Mm-hmm. One interesting kind of local kind of connection with this, Polly Murray, who was a poet turned lawyer, and eventually late in her life became an Episcopal priest who served in churches here and including in Chapel Hill, provided pivotal material for the Supreme Court. And Thurgood Marshall, one of the Supreme Court justices, mentioned how important her work was in generating all the case material that helped them decide in that
Interesting.
Favor.
Interesting. Yeah.
Very important.
A lot of fascinating. So we're mentioning Linda Brown because she passed away earlier this week. Yeah, but a lot of really fascinating things that surround that case. First of all, like we think of Brown versus Board of Education as a sort of landmark decision. There were a lot of Supreme Court cases that kind of led up to it that created the precedent that they could use to overturn Plessy v. Ferguson and strike down separate but equal. But we think of it as this decision that everyone just sort of hails as this obviously great constitutional decision. 1954 was extremely controversial. In fact, when I teach the Supreme Court for American government, you point out if you look at a Supreme Court case, it's always X versus Y or Brown versus Board of Education, Miranda versus Arizona. The party on the left before the versus is called the petitioner. That's the party that loses at the lower court level, and they're petitioning the Supreme Court to hear my appeal. So Brown versus Board of Education means Brown lost at the lower court level. The lower court is like, no, segregation is totally fine. And then it has to go all the way to the Supreme Court through all of those levels. As you mentioned, three years it takes to get to a point where segregation is overturned. And then nothing happens because southern states, Topeka, Kansas, and even here in Chapel Hill, you have massive resistance. So the desegregation process takes 20 plus years for in some districts for there to be any progress at all.
Well, and listeners should know that when Aaron talks about teaching classes, you know him as the brilliant radio show host here in the afternoons, but he also has a PhD in history. And
political science. And never I took a history class
sorry,
in my life,
well,
actually.
But he knows so much that it's so enjoyable to hear him. And if you ever get a chance to hear him make a presentation, do so. You will come away not only educated, informed, but entertained, too. And that's remarkable. So
thank you.
That's my tip of the hat.
Thank you so much.
So, yeah, this is that's a
big decision.
I
love having you on the air.
Well, you know, we're thinking about, you know,
it's an
pivotal
ego boost
people.
Every week,
And we've talked about how this area seems to attract Renaissance people. And
it really
you certainly
does.
Fit that bill. And I think we're all grateful for your perspectives and outlook and your passion and also your expertise, not only here, but elsewhere. So.
Oh, stop.
Wait a minute, you're getting taller.
Oh, you.
But that's about history, you know. If I don't say, hey, you know, people make a difference, and we see this time and again, whether it's, you know, Oliver Brown, the father, stepping in for his third grader, or other people, including some more ones that we kind of have a smile about, like March 28, 1797. Now, this is the early years of the new republic, the United States of America. The first washing machine patent was issued to Nathaniel Briggs of New Hampshire.
Oh, thank goodness.
I guess they got tired of, you know, washing their clothes or outside when it was cold and said there's got to be a little bit better way.
How does it work? This is 80 years before electricity.
That's it.
So
well,
was it like a turn crank?
Yeah, that's okay. Right. They had to wait a little bit longer for the other part of that. And I'm sure that wine aficionados were really happy when March 27th, 1860, the corkscrew patent was granted to M.L. Byrne of New York City.
Good. Because prior to that, they were just sitting there staring at these wine bottles going, I'm sure this is fine, but I don't know how to get it open.
It's going to be really old. Boy, it'll taste good in 100 years. Maybe that's what they did. They didn't actually drink
the wine. We tried smashing it against the side of a boat, but we didn't really think that one through.
Wine cellars filled with wine. What are we going to do with these? and here's another nice thing. March 31st, 1889 is when the Eiffel Tower was opened to the public for the first time. And at that time, at 984 feet, it was the tallest human-made structure in the world, which is kind of interesting.
Still the tallest in Paris, isn't it?
Yes.
There's a tallest or second tallest. I think it's the tallest,
I think,
right?
So.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, close to that is the Okinichi Mountain at 800 and some feet. And you can actually walk up this nice kind of ranger access drive, and this overlook where you see hundreds of miles. But it's the largest natural point between here and the coast. So if you want to get a taste of the Eiffel Tower without having to go to Paris, go over to
Okinichi
Okinichi Mountain.
All right.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. French people probably thought that was ugly, too.
Yeah.
But they were wrong.
You know, here's something I did not know. And, you know, it's the middle of World War II. And March 31st, 1943 is when Oklahoma, the musical, opened, the Rodgers and Hammerstein. And I thought, is that right? I was thinking it was after the war, it was in the middle of the war that
the movie came out in what, about 10 years,
yeah,
8 or
about,
10 years later?
Right.
There.
Yeah,
that seems about right.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating whenever something like that, like cultural, happens in the middle of what you think of as being like the middle of a major war.
Right.
Like when you think of the early 40s, you don't think of musicals on Broadway or fun movies coming out. Like you think of the war, but like people were living their lives.
And it was a real touch of Americana. And anybody who's seen Oklahoma knows how much that musical bespeaks that. And I think that was very reassuring to people to know, you know, not only in the midst of war, what we were fighting for, but what was America about in one part of America, at least out west.
Also very innovative, too. I mean, I think one of the first, like, musicals that we understand it today with the narrative and the story and songs interspersed, like that form of culture doesn't even really come into being until Showboat, which is not that long before Oklahoma. So this is
still
a new innovative form that Rodgers and Hammerstein
are. They also
are.
Have that dance sequence
in
there. And now I do have a confession. In high school, I was cast as Curly.
Ah, nice.
Lead character. Now, I do not have curly hair. So the first time they tried to do it, I said, you made me look like Harpo Marx. They said, we'll give you a horn.
That works.
They gave me a starter pistol, and then during this dream sequence, as the other character, Judd, advances menacingly, the bad guy, I'm supposed to fire it in the air. Well, a starter pistol is rather loud on stage, and when it was fired, not only did it was deafening, but one of the bulbs overhead blew, and Judd stopped and started backing up. And I looked at the pistol and said,
So, I had a very similar experience. The one musical I did in high school was Little Shop, and I got cast as Seymour, and there's this sequence, Little Shop of Horrors, right? There's the sequence at the end when Seymour is fighting the plant, and he's trying a whole bunch of whole bunch of different ways to kill the plant, and they're all failing, and one of them is he takes a gun and he fires it at the plant, and I had a little like cap gun basically, but I'm a wuss, so I fire this thing and like it makes this like a loud popping sound. They told me afterwards that I apparently like screamed at the top of my lungs and like threw the pistol on the floor.
And that would seem very pretty. Like, well, fortunately, that's a character.
Fortunately,
yeah.
That was just in rehearsal. Yeah. So by the time we actually rolled around to the show, it's like, okay, we've got it. We got
See,
it. We
history
got it.
Okay. is not as okay. composed of not only the momentous but also the fun part too.
Anyway, Oklahoma, okay. 1943.
All right, now we'll go to the more momentous right. ones, and that is. March 30th, 1867 is when the 15th Amendment
yes.
to the Constitution goes into effect. That's the one that goes, the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. So
goes into
kind of
effect?
Important.
Or yeah, well, it's not ratified until later.
No, it was passed, well, it was passed in... That's
is it introduced?
Right.
In
it must have been introduced because you're right.
I
it's
think.
It's
yeah.
passed by Congress February 26, 1869, and then ratified February 3, 1870. So that must have been one of what must have been introduced mm-hmm. On this date, March 30th. And the other one is 1961, March 29th, is when the 23rd Amendment was ratified, which provided electors for the District of Columbia.
Yes.
Which, of course, is so important about saying, you know, you can't have taxation without representation.
Yep.
And even though there are delegates, they don't have a vote, but they do have a voice.
Yeah, they still don't have representation in Congress. They can at least have a say in the election of the president.
That's right. Well, it's like our U.S. territories. And this week, March 31st, 1917, is a day that is known as... Transfer Day. And that's when the U.S. Virgin Islands were purchased by the United States from Denmark for $25 million.
Okay.
And you know, all those people there and Puerto Rico and Guam, while they're U.S. territories, they are full U.S. citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And some reports from Politico about the discrepancy and how hurricane relief was allocated between residents of Texas versus Puerto Rico is starting to make the rounds right now.
Yeah.
It's showing the real disparity. But people in Puerto Rico are U.S. citizens just like you and I.
Yep.
And that's an important point.
Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters. Can't let this segment go without mentioning that today, I believe, is the anniversary of Carolina winning the national basketball championship in 1982.
Is that right?
Yes,
oh,
I believe
my.
So.
Oh, wow.
According to our own Dakota Moyer, let me confirm that there.
Well,
but, yeah.
that should we Jordan should all stand a little
shot.
Taller, shouldn't
yep.
we? That is great. Wonderful. Boy, I also know that, let's see, on this date.
Yep, March 29th, 1982. That
wow.
was... That was 36 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
That? Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, those kind of great moments in sports, like we've all been watching the NCAA, and you're rooting for local teams, and when they're bumped out, you start rooting for other teams.
Right, right.
But it's just great fun, and it's great to see that desire and ambition you can't predict those. And any predictors of the past don't necessarily predict what's going to happen with any particular game. And that's true of history, too, as we found. Apple Computer... April 1st, 1976 is when the Apple Computer Company was founded. And, of course, it's also April 1st is when Easter, and also it's when there's going to be a full eclipse of the sun on April 1st. Did you know that?
I think you're...
Or maybe it's
April
Fool's.
Or maybe it's April Fool's Day. I was waiting for something here.
Waiting for the shoe to drop.
Waiting for the shoe to drop,
by without at least mentioning that.
It's like, we just had a full eclipse of the sun. If I know my astronomy well, which I don't, but I know it a little bit.
Another one so soon?
It's
April 1st day. So on Sunday, you start
there is a total eclipse of the sun. It starts at midnight and it runs until...
That's right. That's a good one. So you can call up any of your friends
there
and family.
You go.
Look outside.
Look outside.
Can't believe it.
All right. Speaking with Scott Washington, we got time for one more. What do you got?
Okay. All right. Here's one that's kind of interesting. Jack O'Neill was born March 27th, 1923. He's an American surfer credited with inventing the wetsuit, and which is kind of new. And the other one is 1868, Patti Smith Hill wrote the words to a song we all have sung many times, composed by her sister, has become the most sung song in the world. Guess what it is?
The theme song to Oklahoma, yes.
We begin with the musical, we end with the musical. Yes, we hope you're singing along too.
There you go. History Matters with Scott Washington. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron. Appreciate it.